Hi, this is Janae Darden, and I work in the KALW News Department. I just wanted to let you know we're in our spring membership drive. We're a listener-supported radio station, and you can help us out. Go to KALW.org and click donate.
KALW.
The San Francisco Chronicle's restaurant critic Soleil Ho is a self-described ethno-food warrior who writes on what she calls the fish sauce beat. She's Asian American, queer, and writes about the intersections of culture and food. And she's revolutionizing the world of restaurant and food critiquing right down to what words she thinks are outdated and offensive, like the term she's constantly fighting, ethnic food. Soleil's work also focuses on how gender, class, and race affect our eating and food culture, history, and writing. She came by our studios, and we had a chat about the foods we grew up with in our immigrant families, like this Sudanese dish I love but brought me a lot of teasing as a kid. It's called molokhia. Molokhia here, when we buy it, what's written on it is Jews mellow?
Oh, is that the herb, right?
It's like a green leaf. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we make it into like a stew with meat. Either we dip bread into it or we eat it with rice. Mm-hmm. And it is very green. And it is a stew that it has this texture of being gooey a little bit. And we love it, right? And so I don't remember who it was from my friends who came over and immediately was like, you know, the green slime.
Yeah, it's mucilaginous, right? Like okra.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes.
Cool.
It ends up being that way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And interestingly enough, now I'm finding it at the farmer's market.
Very cool.
Like some Asian communities use it as well. Mm-hmm. But what about you? Did you have that kind of two worlds of food thing?
Sort of. So my parents and grandparents were from Vietnam. They were refugees. And so as part of the deal of being accepted into the United States, they didn't have a lot of stuff. They didn't have a lot of resources to bring with them. And so they also got placed. They didn't get to choose where they ended up. Mm-hmm. And so they ended up in the middle of nowhere in Illinois. No offense.
Mm-hmm. Illinois is great.
But that meant that they didn't have access to the ingredients that they were able to understand, you know, like fish sauce or even rice noodles, that sort of stuff. They had to drive 3 hours to Chicago to get that. What also happened was they ended up relying on donations from church, food pantry stuff, welfare, and that meant they ate a lot of American ingredients, American foods. And so I grew up eating Wonder Bread, Coca-Cola, that sort of stuff. And my family shaped those foods into a paradigm that they understood.
Like how?
So on our trips to Chicago, for instance, they would buy like the Maggie seasoning.
Oh, yes.
The fish sauce, all of those elements, mm-hmm. and would marry those elements with the foods that were very American. For instance, you know, banh mi, the sandwich, I think that many people know now. Mm-hmm. For us, it was a slice of toasted Wonder Bread, Braunschweiger, like from the grocery store, that little Oscar Mayer-like chub of liver. And a little bit of butter and Maggi.
That was the banh mi?
Yeah.
Oh. So you didn't have two worlds of food. You had one world that was mixed.
Yes. To me, I think that's an interesting story as well because we compromised a lot with food. And we, you know, when you think about fusion, for instance, mm-hmm. it is like a white gaze applied to ingredients from elsewhere.
Right.
But for me, how I grew up was it's the gaze of, I guess, the subaltern, right, or of people of color, where we are looking out into this world that is very white and trying to understand it and shape it to our understanding mm-hmm. and our paradigms, our frameworks. And that, to me, feels very revolutionary. Where we are trying to shape this white supremacist world into something that we understand that we can accept rather than vice versa, which is the more typical narrative. So, you know.
Which is what your grandparents were doing.
Yes.
At that time.
And I think we don't appreciate that enough. Uh-huh. People who write about food from communities of color and mm-hmm. food from immigrant communities. I think this narrative has often been we are shaped by the environment, but I think thinking about the ways in which we shape our environment in turn is also very interesting.
Oh, for sure. And that makes me think about, you know, just like fast forward to today, right? We're in the Bay Area, lots of diverse restaurants with all kinds of foods, and the communities who make it, you know, you can get your quote unquote authentic. What do you think about that also? Kind of Americanized versions of food versus authentic versions of food. What are your feelings about that?
I think when you are striving for authenticity, you're always going to lose. Everyone has their own idea of what's authentic. Everyone has a grandparent, right? Everyone has that reference that no one else has. That seems closest to the truth. And I think this is also, I don't know, I think this fits with like my philosophy on truth as well, because we all have our different versions of what is true. And to fight over what is authentic and what is not tends to just be an assertion of like whose truth is more truthful. Mm-hmm. And to me, it is just a futile task.
And according to whom?
Like, right.
Who gets to be the judge on that?
Exactly. And nostalgia, I think, crystallizes our memories in a way that reality will never live up to. And that's why authenticity as a yardstick of quality just doesn't feel fair to anyone.
One thing that's so refreshing about you is that you have this honesty and this transparency. Your latest review was of a restaurant that I love. I live in Union City, so all about the Union City, Fremont, you know, Hayward area. And you reviewed Jine Jine. And I was just like wondering how you decided that I'm going to just tell things like they are. I'm going to say in this article that I don't know much about Burmese food. Right. And I'm going to be that person that's going to be like vulnerable and honest and just tell it like it is as an approach. How did you decide on that?
I think it's really risky to do that, especially as a woman of color in a position like this, where I am pressured to be the expert, because otherwise I would be making everyone who thinks I'm not qualified correct, because I am very different compared to people who have come before me, just demographically. And so, you know, whenever we break into these industries that are very homogenous, there can be a lot of pressure to exceed, be twice as good.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't need to tell you that.
That's a pressure.
And so for me, the most revolutionary and strange thing to do would be to admit that weakness. And it was a gamble, because otherwise, you know, people could be like, oh, wow, what a dummy that she doesn't know like such and such food, or why are we listening to her? Why are we reading her work if she doesn't know anything? So I had a lot of anxiety going into that. At the same time, I also got a lot of feedback from some readers who were uncomfortable with not knowing. And that's why they didn't go to restaurants that didn't fit into their own community. You know, like,
because you also talk about, you've noticed people shy away from restaurants or food they can't pronounce.
Right. And I think there's a complication to that, too, because my family's names are unpronounceable to people who are not Vietnamese. Mm-hmm. You can learn how to pronounce them, just like they all learned how to say the word February when they came here.
Or Tchaikovsky.
Right, or Tchaikovsky. Or the word chronicle. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. It is possible. And so I wanted to model that behavior and just say, like, no, like, we learned, and you can learn. You know, I think if we're going to try to be better for each other as a community, then we should be vulnerable too.
What's wrong with the term ethnic food?
It's a practical thing. We all have an ethnicity. We all have height. We all have eye colors. We all have bodies. And so it's, to me, ethnic food is just, it's strange, because doesn't all food have an ethnic background? But if we're using that term to refer to only some kinds of restaurants, then that's just white supremacy.
And we're othering.
Yes. Mm-hmm. To use the term in that way just, I think, calcifies racial categories. It puts forth this argument that only some people have an ethnicity of note, mm-hmm. as well. They're not default. Mm-hmm. And to use that term feels really benign, but at the same time, you are just affirming that they are different.
Do you think you're revolutionizing restaurant critiquing?
I don't know if true revolution is possible under that framework in the end. Yeah, I don't know. It's not like anything's being burnt down. In the end, I am providing a service. I work within these limitations that, I don't know.
Decolonizing?
I think decolonizing is complicated, right? Because in the end, I am also a settler.
Hmm.
I don't know if it's possible for me to do it.
Do you carry any condiments with you in your purse?
Oh, my gosh. No, because all I have is chapstick. Chapstick and a book.
Soleho, thank you.
Thank you.
Soleho is a food and culture writer, podcaster, and the San Francisco Chronicle's restaurant critic. Find out what she has to say about restaurants in your neighborhood.